Welcome to Final Final, the podcast for brand storytelling and other conundrums. I'm Heather McDee. Well, today we are talking about what storytelling looks like through digital interaction, as well as mission-based marketing and any other things that may take us today through our conversation. I'm happy to welcome Eric Tao, founder of a new virtual teaching platform called Megaminds, which engages students in kindergarten through 12th grade. He's had a really interesting career. It spanned Google as lead digital producer on an innovation team, experimenting with new technologies like virtual reality, and then those potential applications in the field, including in education. So he's had over 20 years of experience, tried a lot of things, led teams, really is an expert in digital interaction. And now he is bringing all of this experience into a new venture that he started, that he struck out on his own, founded, and is bringing to life right now in this new virtual education platform. I know we have a lot of things we want to talk about today, Eric, but I would love to hear a little bit more. Can you talk a little bit about who you are, where you come from, kind of, you know, what is your take on your career and some of the things that you've worked on?
Sure. So as we were talking about before the microphones came on, you know, my background and my career has kind of taken a very kind of curvy path, I guess you could say. It's definitely not had your traditional, go to school, have the career, have a family, that type of life. So originally I went to an art school. I went to Art Center College of Design in Pasadena, California, where I studied filmmaking. And I think, you know, that talking about, you know, brand storytelling, that's really kind of where, from a craft perspective, that's where I learned, you know, at the time applying it obviously to films, motion pictures, and specifically ads and music videos. So I had a brief career as a music video and commercial director. At one time, I was the youngest commercial director in all of Canada, which is where I'm originally from. But the career, I guess, didn't work out. And at that point, I transitioned to the agency side of advertising, and I worked in New York. For probably, you know, most of the major ad agencies, you know, in the city. After about 10 years doing that, I guess my claim to fame during that time was I produced the Can You Hear Me Now commercials for Verizon, if you remember those back in the day.
Oh gosh, yes, I do. I sure remember those. That's awesome.
Yeah, he was Paul. He was fantastic. He was a really great guy, and I got to travel the world with him. So that was fun thing to do in my early 30s. But I think most people that work in advertising kind of reach that moment where you just kind of have you're in a meeting and you're just like, okay, how many more times am I going to be in a meeting to try to figure out how to make a multinational conglomerate even more money? You know, you also all have a realization that all of your labor, all of your knowledge goes towards making things that annoy people. So, I went through that, and I know many others have as well. And, you know, at that time I decided to make a switch. I also, my wife works in education and, you know, she helps people, you know, every day somebody gets better at something because of her labor. And, you know, I saw that as something to aspire to. So around 2015, I made the switch into technology. I was lucky enough to get an opportunity at Google, like you mentioned off the top, and worked on an innovation team there, where we were kind of like a SWAT team, I guess you could say, where other teams at Google that had, you know, marketing problems or technology problems, we would partner with them to help solve them. So one of my first projects there was shoppable video on YouTube. So nowadays you can watch a sneaker review and buy that pair of sneakers straight from the browser. But back then, you know, this was a new concept, shoppable videos, back in 2015, 2016. So we laid the groundwork for that. During my time there, I worked closely with the VR group. And we worked on a few projects, you know, one of which was trying to seed YouTube with 360 video. At the time, Google's big push was the cardboard virtual reality headsets that you could make out of a piece of cardboard. Yeah. And we had I had a side project while I was working with that team. It had to do with a school for autism or school that had autistic kids in New Jersey. And we wanted to create a therapeutic experience for that child. So the child could only walk through Target in a specific way. So we created, we filmed, you know, it was very simple. We filmed a path for the child to walk through Target in another way that he could experience in VR. And it was actually really effective for this child. And that was my first aha moment, where I was just like, like, okay, well, this technology is kind of, you know, there are applications beyond gaming, you know, and film content for this type of technology. So flash forward to 2019, I met my co-founder, who is a principal at a school in Brooklyn, and the New York City Department of Education had tasked her with coming up with a school concept for school based around immersive learning that was to be placed in District 19, which is East New York, which is one of the lowest socioeconomic regions in the city, if not the entire country. And the thesis behind that was, you know, that we could take advantage of, you know, immersive learning and all the qualities that you can harness from that into increasing outcomes and deeper cognitive comprehension and all of these great qualities, but you could also use it to combat inequality. That, you know, every technological shift, you saw it with personal computers and you saw it with mobile, bypasses low-income communities, and they are the last to receive any benefits from that. But our thesis was that if we could create a school around these new technologies, you know, and emerging technologies, and place that in the lowest socioeconomic zone in the city, we could combat that at a grassroots level, where the students would grow up using this technology and then be able to infuse local businesses with the know-how, and then they would be able to capitalize on that. So that was our thesis at the time. So in March of 2020, we presented to the chancellor, the DOE's chancellor's people. It was received well, but then a week later, the world shut down. And our project is, you know, officially hasn't been killed, but has been on hold for over 2.5 years and signals where that's at. So about a year ago, I turned to Maureen, my co-founder, and I was like, listen, we've done so much work on this. We did so much research. You know, we did usability testing. We had kids trying the hardware, you know, and it was really well received. I was like, it would be really shame if we didn't pursue this in some other way. Meanwhile, what's been happening the last 2 years in technologically speaking is, you know, the tech stack for what's called WebXR. You know, immersive experiences that are delivered through the web has been getting really good, to the point where it's now feasible where XR can be a delivery system for high-end, high-quality learning experiences. So we created this company with the mission of delivering high-quality learning experiences to everybody. And you know, because it's browser-based, because it's accessible via the web, you can experience something immersively via your smartphone. You don't even need Wi-Fi. You could be in the middle of a field someplace and be able to access these experiences. So what we're trying to build and what we are building is essentially, you can look at it, think of it as a mashup between Roblox and Zoom.
And I love it. Yeah, there's so much in there that I would love to talk to you about and ask you about. You know what I think? Why don't we start at the beginning? Because there's a lot in there to explore. And I love that you and I have had a similar approach to our careers in terms of a nonlinear, going where things made sense and where things felt like they mattered. But we've gone up different routes. And so that's why I'm really interested to talk to you about all that. One thing that so Eric and I jumped right in as soon as we got on this recording, and we were like, wait, we need to start recording. So. But before we start recording, we talked a little bit about how, you know, you had said you went to film school. We started talking a little bit about how out there are all these genres that are craft storytelling. It's not for a company. It's not to make money necessarily. It's really something that people find passion in. They get really good at it. And some people make entire careers just out of craft storytelling. For example, things like stand-up, film. Yeah. Photography, theater, you know, some of those things. And so I know for me, I started out in theater and I do storytelling at the Moth. I do photography there's a lot of things I do that are just storytelling for myself. I know you've said that you do too. How do you feel like that has given you a good base, or how does that inform your storytelling that you do for a living in your career? How do those work together?
Sure. Well, I can tell you how it applies to specifically to what we're doing right now. And you know, when you're working on an early stage startup, there's pretty much only two things that really matter. Okay. It's number one is, do you have a compelling product? Are you solving a problem for your potential users? And then number two is, do you have a compelling brand story? So the way that comes into play is, number one, obviously the product, you know, teachers, where our users are teachers. We hope that the teachers really like the product that we're building, that they, that their students will find it compelling, that, and that it's a great teaching and learning experience. So that's number one. But number two, the brand story that you're creating or that you're telling informs basically everything else. So, you know, being able to hire employees, you're being able to raise money from investors, being able to bring partners on board, advisors, everything else that you need to grow and launch a company comes from being able to tell your brand story in a compelling way. I'll give you an example. So my CTO, Ed, is one of the, I personally think he is the top guy in the world at our tech stack. I searched for him for probably about a year. And I met with dozens of people, and Ed obviously was, you know, being as skilled as he is and what he does, had, I think there were 8 offers for him, but he chose our company. And I think that's because, personally, I guess you could ask him, but I think it's because I was able to tell a compelling brand story about why we're doing what we're doing, what, you know, how we're going to get there, what our goals are, and, you know, what we're all about. If I wasn't able to do that, there's no way he would have picked us over the 8 other companies that were competing for him. You know, and we're a small little startup, you know, he could have picked big companies to work for, but he chose to work for us, you know, and I attribute that to the brand story. You know, I've been able to assemble a team of advisors, of four advisors that are just, you know, luminaries in their spaces. And it's all because of telling the story that about our company that people really get excited about and want to make them want to participate. So those are the two things I think you need when you're launching a company, is that great product and then that great story.
Yeah. Like why I always, the way I put it in my work is what we do and why it matters. You mm-hmm. know, those are the two core things that I really think about when we're putting together messaging, marketing, you know, and really it's so fun. It's so easy. A lot of times I know I have to check myself to get caught up in corporate speak, like even the word marketing. You know, like you're, yeah. And at base, yes, we are selling a product, but it's also at heart explaining what you do. It's talking about what you do, why it matters, how it's going to help someone. And sometimes I think about like breaking down the words we use so that it feels more accessible. Just some of the things you were saying got me thinking about that, especially how your new product is so accessible through a browser. You don't have to do a lot, because that was a big issue with VR. I know for a while, it's like, okay, you have to buy hardware. You have to, there's all these things you have to do to be able to use it. And so being able to create an accessible product, you know, and I think anytime, especially when you have a product that's supposed to do good in the world, make a positive impact, and you're like, yeah, but only a few people can use it.
Yeah, I mean,
it really undermines your message.
Exactly. There's quite a few, you know, even our competitors, some of our competitors are, you know, oh, we want to help underserved pop student populations, but you're only available in VR. Yeah. You know, that will be like less than 1% of the student population of America. How are you going to help underserved student populations? So yeah, I mean, I agree 100%.
How did you, and this is something, you know, Eric and I have found out we have a few things in common in only a few minutes of talking. When you had mentioned too, and I totally agree with this and relate to this, you talked about how you worked in advertising, you know, making money for corporations, which is a very valid career path, 100%. Sure. But I think for some people, it's really important to them to try to do work that it does feel like it matters. How do you, can you kind of talk about how you think about, cause I know at a certain point I made the switch, into telling stories that I felt like actually made a difference, that shared practical information that people could use. You know, it wasn't just flashing lights and pretty pictures. There was actually some substance there. You know, and I call it mission-based marketing. And your current venture is really focused on trying to make a positive impact for students and in education. How is that? How do you approach that differently? You know, as opposed to something that's like a really flashy ad, a really flashy story that maybe is fun to watch, but it's heavier on the flash, less on the substance.
That's a good question. I think what it boils down to is the product that we're building. So this is less about the, you know, well, the brand story is part of it, but the way we action it is through the product. You know, we make sure that the product is A, accessible, B, affordable. We make sure that there's ways that the people who need the product the most are able to get it, you know, and that all comes in the different product features, the way we, you know, the way we monetize, that sort of thing. This is our brand story. So this is who we are as a company. This is what we're trying to, you know, that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to democratize access to high quality education. So quality education that otherwise they would never have the ability to access. So, you know, we're thinking on a global scale, and I guess when it comes down to it, telling the story of the company from that perspective is in a way, it's really no different than telling the story of a big brand, say like Nike or something like that. You just have different elements that you're focusing on. You know, you're not focusing on the glitz, you're focusing on the heart, I guess you could say.
Yeah. Well, and I actually, I think it's a fascinating conversation because I actually was talking to a friend recently who also does what we do. And he was talking about how COVID has really changed what people are looking for, you know, in terms of the products they use, how they consume media, you know, even down to, we were talking actually about company parties, company holiday parties. He's like, I don't feel good about that. I don't feel good about like going there and I see them. I mean, you know, corporate holiday parties are insane. They are insane. You know, they're millions and millions and millions of dollars. And I think pre-COVID, I know for me, I didn't blink twice at it. I was like, oh, this is great. Put on a ball gown and go into this huge gala. And it was beautiful and fun. And he was like, now I feel weird about it. He was like, I don't think we're ever going back to that because people don't want it because it just feels so trite. And it's like that money could have gone into something that could have been so much more helpful and made such a better impact. And I hear what he's saying. And I think there's some truth to it that I don't know that the way we talk to audiences before works anymore.
Well, you're absolutely right. And isn't it great? Isn't that amazing that the world is changing in this way? One of the things I went through a business accelerator a few months ago. And one of the things they told us, one of the questions that came up is, how do we compete with like Google and Facebook to hire engineering talent? And the answer they gave us was, well, you know, your mission based, it was an ed tech accelerator. So all of the companies there, a lot of ed tech companies are mission based. And, you know, and their response was, you are mission based. You know, this, you can give your engineers something that Google cannot, that Facebook cannot. And it's the fact that you stand for something other than making money, obscene amounts of money. And quite honestly, you know, that's also part of how we were able to get Ed to come on board, is that's what he was looking for, you know, and he's young engineer in his 20s, you know, and you know, I feel like there's also a generational shift happening where views are changing, you know, where, you know, what's important to people is not what was important to people 15 years ago.
Yeah, I think it's great. It definitely is, I think, challenging all the ways that we used to do things, because it used to be, you know, there's that term, I'm sure you've heard it too, creative breakthrough or breakthrough creative, which that still stands. And that is still so much more important. But I think people are so much smarter. And, you know, it's like, well, this is great. But what are you actually doing? What are you actually doing for me? What does this mean? What is the product? Like, they're not so easily distracted by those things anymore, which I think is amazing. This is building a little bit on a conversation I had with Brooke Forey in a prior episode of this podcast series, where she talked about working with small businesses. And she said some small businesses come to work with them. She said, I don't know that they've spent much time thinking about what their values are, or to your point, what do you stand for? What are you here to do? And she said, that's really what it starts for any brand story in her view. And I totally agree. Like, even if you're not a nonprofit, even if you're not like saving the world, whatever you're doing, you need to know what you stand for, like at a central core level.
You know, it's interesting. And this, I've thought a lot about what you just said, and applying it to craft storytelling. So what they taught us, what I was taught in film school, was that, you know, every film, every commercial, every piece of film content has a theme, and everything is in service of the theme. So how an actor says a line, how you frame a shot, everything services that theme. It's the same thing for a company. You know, when you're building a product, you have to have a reason to exist, you know, your mission, your goal, you know, and every feature you develop, everything that you put in your product, how it appears on the web, has to go back to that theme in some way, you know. So companies, I don't really understand how you can even create a company without having some sort of mission or having some sort of, you know, goal in mind of what you're trying to achieve with what you're building. At least that's the way we've approached, you know, Megaminds and what we're doing there.
Yeah. Well, and it really gives you the opportunity, if you figure out who you are, what you're trying to do, and really go deep on understanding your values, your mission, all of those things. I feel like it gives you a much richer, persona or much richer understanding of who you are to be able to even go to market, being able to go out there and tell that story to investors. You have to know those things first to be able to even like have a minimally effective conversation about what your company does.
Yeah, and frankly, it's going to make your product better. It's going to make your product, you know, more effective.
Yeah. Well, and I was talking to someone else about this as well, about how sometimes people forget the product in storytelling. Like, I think we've all been in situations where we had to take a product that was not so great and like somehow spin it, like that whole idea of spin, which I hate. Like, I really try, you know, I'm very lucky. Like, once I left agency life, it doesn't happen so often anymore. But, you know, that is a big part of your brand story too. It goes beyond marketing. It's also, what is your product actually doing? Does it actually work? Is it actually innovative? Is it actually thoughtful? Does it work with intention? Is it accessible? Like, all of those facts about your product, that is a huge part of your storytelling as well. And I don't know. I think we've all been in situations where it's like, oh, this product is not so great. People hate it. It's not very effective. And I'm in a situation where I have to make people love it. Like, that's just like set up to fail. And I hate being in that corner.
You just talked about 10 years of my career in advertising. That's the way I kind of felt.
Yeah. You're like, that's why I left. It's just hard. It's hard to do that. Okay. So something I think is really interesting about you, and I don't have much experience in this at all, so I'm just so, I barely know where to start with it, is that you have really spent so much of your career in immersive work, immersive products. Mm-hmm. How does storytelling, like, I don't think, like, I would love to work on a project like that, but I would not lead it. I think I would be part of the team, like learning and contributing in those certain, you know, in that way. But for you who've gone so deep in it, how is the digital interaction space different from other mediums? Like, so, how do you think about it differently there?
A lot of my career in marketing was as a digital interactive producer. But when you say that, well, prior to a few years ago, when you said that, you're talking about clicks, right? You're talking about, you know, apps. You're talking about things that move around in 2D. What we're building now is a 3D immersive experience. So we're talking about a whole different type of interaction. And you know, as far as how storytelling is conveyed in this medium, it's a brand new medium. You know, it's existed so for probably about, you know, 6 years. People are still trying to figure out, you know, how storytelling works in this medium. So, you know, I'm very curious, you know, to see how it evolves over time. You know, I've seen how it's evolved in 6 years, and I think nobody's cracked the nut, you know, of what it can be and what is brand storytelling in this atmosphere. You know, Facebook's doing what they're doing with Horizons. Their metaverse is trying to be, you know, very consumer friendly. HTC has sort of a much more niche approach. They're going after the tech savvy, you know, Web3, you know, crowd. You know, our end users are kids. You know, so we're trying to make something fun and friendly while also having strong utility for teachers, you know. So, you know, nobody's really nailed it at scale yet. There have been some individual one-off experiences that are, you know, really memorable and really, really effective. But I don't think, as far as kind of a top-down brand perspective, nobody's quite nailed what this, you know, immersive medium can do yet.
Yeah. No, I think it's interesting because I definitely don't know enough about it to have a perspective on. I think it's interesting. It's definitely a completely different way of telling a story. And it'll be interesting to see how it shapes up in terms of defining, you know, what our point of view is. Like, oh, I know this works. I know this works really well. And getting to that place, that'll be interesting to see like how that shakes out.
And I think, you know, part of the reason is that, you know, the main users, I came across a stat recently, it was 75% of kids 9 through 12 or 9 through 13 in the United States play Roblox. So you're talking about, you know, the tail end of Generation Z and the beginning of Generation Alpha. And that generation that's going to really take this medium to new heights. So, you know, if you think about it from that perspective, you know, they're 10 years away from graduating from college and entering the workforce. But when that transition happens, you're going to see a wholesale change as far as how business is done, how people prefer to work. You know, these are the inroads that Zuckerberg is trying to establish right now. And he's encountering a lot of friction because all of the people that, you know, he's marketing to now, it's just a giant paradigm leap. It's like, well, what is this? You know, why am I an avatar? Do I want to work as an avatar? So for our generation and you know, it's a big leap in it, you know, but for this generation that's coming up now, it's life. You know, yeah. And I, you know, I'm fairly confident that they're the ones that are going to lead the charge in this, and that, you know, right now they're teenagers, but a few years from now, the big developments that you're going to see in this space are going to be led by them.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, my kids teach me things, and sometimes I'm like, oh no, I'm that person that like the Facebook, you know, or like like, oh geez, my 8-year-olds are teaching me some things now. Okay, so as a startup, you know, that's a big switch for you. Other people have done that too, gone from corporate life and said, hey, I want to strike out and do my own thing, which that's something you've done. What are some of the biggest challenges or lessons you've learned? I have to imagine that has taught you so much, you know, starting something from the ground up.
It's hard. I think you have to be a little crazy, at times. I can say it's the biggest roller coaster ride that I've ever been on, you know, where I'll go from, even within a week, I'll go from like riding an incredible high to, you know, having a big low, like, oh, this is never going to work. You know, to then the next day, it's like, oh my God, this is going to be the biggest thing ever. You know, so it's you have to have conviction, I guess. That's you have to believe in what you're doing, and that all stems back to, you know, being mission driven and having that kind of North Star to keep, you know, building towards. And if you don't have that, or if you don't believe in it firmly enough, then I don't see how you can really proceed, because it probably isn't worth it.
And I want to connect some dots here, because some of what you're saying here is making me think of, you know, something that Kristen Keenan, who's someone else, she's a color materials designer. She worked on, you know, some of the signature athlete shoes for basketball at Nike, like LeBron James, Kobe Bryant. And then she's at Ford now working on many of their lines. And something that she said that I thought was interesting, she's like, everybody loves the concept. Everybody loves the big ideas. Everybody loves thinking big. And she was like, where the rubber meets the road is having the conviction to actually make it happen. And she's like, if you're not willing to see it through, if you're not willing to put in that hard work, she said, that's the part that's really hard. Concepting these big ideas, thinking big. She's like, that part's easy. But I like that word you use, conviction, because that really is what it takes. Like, you have to really believe in it at a deep level, to go through everything you have to go through to make it actually happen.
And you have to put it in it's a huge risk. It's a huge sacrifice. I put essentially, you know, if you think of it, you know, my corporate career, if this doesn't work out for me, you know, I have like a big, huge gap. And then being able to, if I need to go back to a corporate job, you know, say, because I have to, you know, eventually pay for my children's education, you know, that's going to be tough, you know? So there's a huge risk, personal risk in doing this. You know, and that's honestly, that's part of the journey. And that's part of, it's back to that, you know, mini life, life journey that we were talking about at the beginning, you know, and, you know, this is part of the journey, I guess you could say.
Well, and Eric and I were talking about before we realized we should start recording, we were talking about the idea, there's an idea out there, that our big life exists as a series of mini lives. And mini, I mean, M-I-N-I, you know, the periods of time, maybe like 5, 6, 7, 8 years or so, where you take a pivot, take a change, take a left turn. And I thought that was a really interesting idea. I know for me, I'm very different than I was at the age of 18. I'm sure you are too, Eric. Whether it's realizing something, you realize something big and you make a change in your career or your life, leaving agency life, you know, to go corporate or go in-house or leaving in-house, you know, to start something you really believe in, you know, that you believe there's a gap in the market and something that could make a really good make a big positive impact on the world and making that big change. And I thought that was really interesting. I've been thinking about it all this time, actually. And this is a real question. I'm kind of putting us into like abstract world a little bit. Like, We're talking a lot about like what makes things matter, like what makes the work we do matter, what makes the stories we tell matter. Now you've got me thinking real deep about like my life has been a series of mini series, as is yours. Like, what's the through line? Like, what are the, you know, as we apply it to our lives, what's the story of our life? What's that through line that takes us through and the things we've learned as we build this whole big thing, the big journey that we're all on? You know, getting to know you, Eric, something I thought was interesting is that you've really gotten, clearly have gotten more and more convicted about something that you believe in and making it happen because it matters. Like, I can see that just from the few minutes I've gotten to know you, moving from like, oh, stories are so fun. Wait, I can do this and actually make an impact and make it matter. You know, like I can see that deepening in your story. And I just think that's very interesting.
Yeah. I mean, that's precisely it. For myself personally, that's, you just nailed it on the head. It's just wanting to have an impact. It's, you know, I go back to that moment where I'm just like, oh my God, everything I know, everything I've been trained to do, all the things that I spend, you know, 40 plus hours a week doing annoys people. It results in a 30-second commercial that goes on TV that people just forget about and don't care to remember. And I didn't really, wasn't a good feeling. You know, it was like my life, my labor just is so easily dismissed. So, you know, and then again, looking at my wife and seeing all of the kids that she helps and, you know, and how they go and can go on to live, you know, more productive lives because of the things she's able to do with them. And that's you know, that's it really from my perspective, that's it at the core, is wanting to do something with my labor that can help people, corny as it sounds, that can make the world a better place. That's and hopefully that this is a culmination. It's happening right now in my life, you know, where it's a culmination of all the skills. I can take all the skills that I've learned, you know, and apply them to a product, to something that can help people, you know, where I wouldn't have been able to do this in my 20s because I didn't know enough about, you know, storytelling, about how to create things in the right way. You know, I certainly wouldn't be able to do this in my 20s, you know, and, you know, I feel like this is the culmination of all of the different mini lives that I've, you know, led in the past 20 years.
Yeah. Well, and you're hitting on something too. I mean, I don't know. Our field has changed so much over the years. And I think now it's become much more of a known thing. People want to do good work. They want their work to matter, I think, especially now more than ever. And so everything is really shifting towards that direction of meaningful interactions, meaningful content, meaningful messages, meaningful products that actually matter. I just think it's so great. It's really interesting. It changes the way we work. We have to be more thoughtful, work with more intention. And it's more rewarding for everyone. Okay, so you are clearly thinking big with this new venture. I have a couple more questions I want to ask you, but this is one I just don't want to skip. So you're clearly thinking big. Can you talk a little bit? You know, we talked about the yin and the yang of really thinking big, but then you got to make it happen or it doesn't matter. You know, can you kind of talk about like how you're thinking big with this venture or how that has helped you move things forward, make things happen in your career?
It's funny. I just had this question. We're in the middle of our first venture capital raise right now. So I'm meeting with the whole series of VC firms and angel investors and what have you. And I had a meeting on Monday actually, where she asked me that question. She was like, where is your company going to be 10 years from now? How do you see your company? And I hesitated, I paused. I was like, I was like a little nervous. I was like, I'm not sure, quite sure how to answer this because she's going to think I'm crazy. So, the answer to that, and the only person I had told this to prior to Monday was my wife. So now my wife knows, the investor knows, and now you and your audience is going to know this, but we want to be, we're thinking big. We're not thinking about being just a tool for teachers. We want to be a tool for all teachers. We want to be the Apple of education. You know, we want to create a brand that and a product that is ubiquitous, you know, in society, that every child around the world has access to, and then B, loves using, you know, and C is tremendously effective and a great product. So, you know, and that's how I relate to how, you know, are we thinking big, you know? And I think good news is the investor actually was very impressed by that answer. She, the way she qualified it, and it made me feel good, was that I was like, this is not going to sound a little crazy. And her answer was, you need to be crazy to be a founder.
You're like, okay, good. We're on the same page. What kind of, you know, as you're thinking about everything you've been through, everything you've learned throughout your career and the work that you've worked on, is there any big takeaway or any piece of advice that you would want to put out there to audience members here that you think they might find useful?
I think it would be just, you know, what we talked about earlier and just establishing, you know, your brand's principles, or if you're not working, you know, in marketing and doing brand storytelling, your own principles and what you stand for, that being the guiding star, the North Star in everything you do. You know, that's personally, for myself personally, that North Star was wanting to make a difference with my time and my labor and my knowledge. For our brand, for the company that I'm building, it's about democratizing access to education, high quality education for everybody in the world. So it's about just establishing, you know, what you stand for and who you are as a brand, as a person, and letting that filter into every other aspect of your life and inform, you know, how you live, how you treat others, you know, how you form relationships.
Well, I mean, I love what you're out there to do, you know, and I love that you have such a focus on making it accessible, you know, and shaping it in a way that it's not just for, you know, a particular set of kids. I know one thing that this is something that always stuck with me. Accessibility to me is a passion point for anything we do. One thing that stuck with me, I worked on a research project where I was interviewing lots of people and just how they go to work every day. And something that stuck, and it was through an education viewpoint. And one thing that stuck with me was a mom who during COVID was an essential worker. She was a single mom. She was like, I have to go to work. I have to leave the house. I have four kids. Two are mine. Two are my sister's, who was not able to take care of them. She said, I have no choice but to leave my 13-year-old in charge of the kids when I go, you know, because if I don't work, they don't eat. I have to leave the house. You know, and she was talking about how at school, you know, because she was also working with the teacher, because the teacher stopped by and was like, hey, I haven't gotten any homework. What's going on? And she had a realization that they were not in a situation to, like, most things that you would think that they would be able to do were just not possible for them. And I remember that interview has always stuck with me. You know, that was how that district got into the thing of like issuing laptops, you know, even things like asking people to have their own computers or have their own phones. A lot of people are not able to do that. And so you have to get really creative about making technology, education, all those things way more accessible, even to a level that I think people don't anticipate. I know in Chicago, it's a major issue. Most of the children in CPS, they need accessibility options. It is such, it's not a bonus in my world. Like the way I think about accessibility is not a bonus. It is critical.
Yes, it should be. Certainly in education.
So I love that you guys focus on that, especially in education space, because it all starts there with these kids and being able to have the opportunity to learn, you know, because a lot of kids want to, but they don't necessarily have the opportunity so that everybody else does.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming and talking to us today, Eric. This was really fascinating. I feel like I learned a lot about some things and mediums that I didn't know much about before an hour ago. So thank you for coming in. So nice to get to know you.
Yeah, likewise, Heather. It's my pleasure.
Thank you, everybody. And we will see you next week.